Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are deep in the throes of the Virginia ratification debate. There is so much meat here. I hope that when it comes to knowledge, you're a carnivore, that you're eating this stuff up. I want to also tell you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. One of the things I need to point out is not in our next break, but in our second break. Let me see. I want to make sure that's... It looks like, yeah, it'll be our second break. We're going to have a special announcement from Lionheart. Anybody that wants to know some of the truth of what's going on in China, because you've heard it from me several times, that China is not what we would consider a good player when it comes to human rights, when it comes to just decency. It is the epitome of evil government. And so with that, Lionheart sent me a little over a minute message, just under 2 minutes. And so we've inserted this. Instead of doing two promos, we're going to provide you this information so that you understand how many people are dying in China, how little people are understanding, because maybe China wants to see how far this may be, either a drill of death, see how far this coronavirus will go and how many people can die from this. Let's just call this a designer dogs, designer breeds. Well, this is a designer disease. And so one of the things that I've mentioned before, and I'll mention again, China has an immense amount of resources it can afford. It believes it can afford to lose that many people. They know they have enough control over their population that Lionheart has reported some, just astounding facts. So I want you to make sure you take a listen, and we've posted this message on our ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. So just go there. You can actually listen to it. You can point people to this so that they can actually hear what the heck is going on. Anyway, with that, we also want to make sure that you continue to help us get our numbers to grow, because it's not, I'm not making money off this show. The intent of growing the show is getting the message out. This message, there's no greater message than what we are doing. If you want to save the Constitution, there is only one process to save our liberty and our Constitution. There are some things that might stop the progress of evil in some ways and in some places, but they do not fully restore our liberties and fully restore our constitutional republic, as the framers and the divine hand of providence place us on this course as a nation. The only way to restore that is republic review. It is shameful that there are supposedly, and I'm air quoting here, pseudo-conservative constitutionalists that are going out of their way to make lies and obfuscating the truth. It is a very sad day that these things are even occurring in America. But you have to understand that there is a self-interest, there are nefarious modes, and there are machinations of avarice or greed, if you want to call it that, of maintaining relevance and so forth. So we're in the final throes of whether we take a stand against evil or not. So as Burke made the comment regarding being a part of the problem or being a part of the solution, the only thing for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing, Or, as I am telling you, the only way for us to solve our problems is to engage in the solution. If not, you are a part of the problem, period. It's that simple. Anyway, we want to move forward because we do want to get into the debates. And let me make sure that we at least do one more thing. We will be doing an interview, and we will have that interview coming up as soon as we're done with the debates with Keith Borders. I've got a few sets of interviews coming up with people over the grand jury, so you definitely want to check these things out. Our listen line number is 605-562-4209. And we do have a sponsor. The only time you'll actually hear the fact that we have a sponsor, it's Red State Coffee. And we would ask that you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org right there on the homepage or on our contribute sponsorship page. You'll find a link both places to Red State Coffee. We would be proud and honored if you would actually support our sponsor who is supporting us. And so with that, I think what we need to do is just kind of go back to where we were in regards to, let me find my note here. There we go. These are the Virginia ratification debates, and there's so many different notes in here that it's a little overwhelming. But what we want to do is we want to make sure we cover all of these different things. The only place in the Virginia or in the ratification debates at all where they talk about martial law, they talk about things that are so important to understand what is constitutional, what is not constitutional, and constitutional applications of these concepts, of these things such as martial law, common law, and those types of things. You'll only find them in the Virginia ratification debates. That's why it's so meaty, and that's why we hope and pray that you are just digesting all of this good stuff. Anyway, the first note is from Mr. Pendleton, and this is, let me just read it here. But it is represented to be a consolidated government, annihilating that of the states. A consolidated government, which is so extensive a territory as the United States, admit of without terminating in despotism. If this be such a government, I will confess with my worthy friend that it is admissible over such a territory as this country. Let us consider whether it be such a government or not. Now, I'm just going to stop right there and give you a little editorializing. If the United States, as it was understood, you know, the Lewis and Clark expedition was forthcoming, they already had a good handle on just how vast this land was. They were looking and they were already projecting to, you know, to extend the states all the way to the western coast. If you look at some of the lines of the states, such as Virginia, the Carolinas, and so forth, they actually stretched all the way across, is like stripes that went across the land, that those states were going to be chopped up into squares or what have you. But that never became the plan, or that never became the outcome of that initial plan of how they were going to take control of all this land. But the fact of the matter is they recognized the immensity, the size of this nation, and they were overwhelmed with its thought of, you know, governing such a vast country. The only other country that they knew that was so large and vast was Russia. Well, actually, China too. I mean, there were some big countries, but this was going to be a huge country. And so they were, you know, they had argued several times in how to control this because they brought up Montesquieu's republics and so forth, that you can only do, you know, that type of ruling or that type of government in a republican form of government or in a republic in a small area. And so the concept of having a republic within republics within republic was, you know, just hard for them to grasp. What? Republics within a republic? And so it's interesting. We'll get into more of this. But he goes on and says, I should understand a consolidated government to be that which should have the sole and exclusive power, legislative, executive, and judicial, without any limitation. Is this such a government, or can it be changed to such a one? It can only extend to general purposes of the union. So this, let's be clear here. Excuse me, sorry. He was talking about an unlimited government with exclusive power, legislation, without any limitation, right? So he threw that out there. And he says this, it can only extend to general purposes of the union. He asked this question, or can it be changed to such a one? And now he's actually speaking the facts. So I'm going to repeat what he just said, because he asks basically two questions, because there's this concept that this government is going to morph into an unlimited government consuming all powers and consolidated and so forth. So the first question he asks is, I should understand a consolidated government to be that which should have the sole and exclusive power, legislative, executive, and judicial without any limitation. Is this such a government, or can it be changed to such a one? Okay, so those were the three questions, not two. Those are the three questions he just threw out, and now he's going to respond in kind and answer. It can only extend to the general purposes of the union. It does not intermeddle with the local particular affairs of the states, whether that be of commerce, whether that be of contracts, whether that be of healthcare, you name it. Well, you know what? We're going to have to get back to his response right after these two promos. So please stay tuned, because the way these men explain just how hard defined and limited the federal government is, the only way it could expand into this mass leviathan that it is through violating the Constitution. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so Mr. Pendleton makes this comment in answering, can this government extend itself to almost anything and everything? Can it actually grow outside of these boundaries? And so first he has to define what it is. And he says, it only extends, this government, this constitution, and the government that it creates only extends to the general purposes of the union. It does not intermeddle with the local particular affairs of the states. Can Congress legislate for the state of Virginia? Can they make a law altering the form of transferring property or the rules of descent in Virginia? In one word, they can make a single law for the individual exclusive purpose for any one state? That's another question. It is the interest of the federal to preserve the state governments. Upon the latter, the existence of the former depends. The Senate derives its existence immediately from state legislatures, and the representatives and president are elected under their direction and control. They also preserve order among the citizens of their respective states, and without order and peace, no society could possibly exist. Unless, therefore, there be state legislatures to continue the existence of Congress and preserve order and peace among the inhabitants, this general government, which gentlemen suppose will annihilate the state's governments, must itself be destroyed. When, therefore, the federal government is in so many respects so absolutely dependent on the state governments, I wonder how any gentleman reflecting on the subject could have convinced any idea of the possibility of the former destroying the latter. But the power of the laying direct taxes is objected to? Government must be supported. This cannot be done without a revenue. If a sufficient revenue be not otherwise raised, recurrence must be had to direct taxation. Gentlemen admit this, but insist on the propriety of first applying to the state legislatures. And he goes on and he says this, let us consider the consequences that would result from this. In the first place, time would be lost by it. Congress would make requisitions in December. Our legislatures do not meet until October. Now, it's a lot different, isn't it, that we meet in January. This is when the state legislatures are meeting right now. Here would be a considerable loss of time admitting to the requisitions to be fully complied with. But suppose the requisitions be refused. Would it not be dangerous to send a collector to collect the congressional taxes after the state legislator had absolutely refused to comply with the demands of Congress? Would not resistance to the collectors be the probable consequence? Would not this resistance terminate in confusion and dissolution of the Union? The concurrent power of two different bodies laying direct taxes is objected to. These taxes are for two different purposes and cannot interfere with one another. I can see no danger in resulting from this, and we must suppose that a very small sum, more than the impost, would be sufficient, but the representation is supposed too small. I confess, I think with the gentleman who opened the debate, Mr. Nicholas, on the subject, and I think he gave a very satisfactory answer to this objection when he observed that through the number might be insufficient to convey information of necessary local interest to a state legislature, yet it was sufficient for the federal legislature, who are to act only on general subjects in which this state is concerned in common with other states. The apportionment of representation and taxation by the same scale is just. It removes the objection that while Virginia paid 1/6 part of the expense of the Union, she had no more weight in public councils than Delaware, which paid but a small portion. By this just apportionment, she is to put on a footing with the small states in a point of representation, influence, and councils. I cannot imagine a more judicious principle than is fixed here by the Constitution. Excuse me. The member shall not exceed one for every 30,000. Now, so people that have any questions on how many are representatives per the Constitution are supposed to represent, the number shall not exceed one per every 30,000. But it is objected that the number may be less. If Virginia sends in that portion, I ask, where is the power in Congress to reject them? States might incline to send too many, They are therefore restrained, but it can't be doubted that they will send the number that they are entitled to. We may be therefore sure from this principle unequivocally fixed in the Constitution that the number of our representatives will be in proportion to the increase or decrease of our population. I can truly say that I am no party nor actuated by any influence but the true interest and real happiness of those whom I represent, and my age and situation, I trust, will sufficiently demonstrate the truth of this assertion. I cannot conclude without adding that I am perfectly satisfied with this part of the system. And so it's very insightful of, you know, how he basically goes down this path. And what he does is he makes these comments at the time of lending to the dependency of the federal government upon the states, because if you look, they had not perverted the Constitution. The presumption was that they were going to at least follow the Constitution and not just usurp powers and start doing things worse and worse and worse and worse to a point where now there are no constraints, zero constraints placed upon our government, or at least they believe that they have zero constraints. Well, I'm here to tell you that the alternative is the fact. The alternative is that they are constrained by the Constitution still to this day, that what really matters is not what the Supreme Court thinks, not what the President thinks, or not what Congress thinks. The only thing that matters regarding the federal government's powers and authority is what the states think. And when you get enough states thinking together and asserting their political power on Congress, you will see the federal government forced into compliance without having to use a weapon, without having to use, you know, any instruments of violent force or lethal force, military force. We do not need to have a revolution. We have a contract. We can enforce our contract. It's kind of that easy, my friends. Well, so as we move on, the next comment comes from Mr. Randolph, or Governor Randolph at the time. And this is what he says. I am afraid I have tried the patience of this house, but I trust you will pardon me, as I was urged by the importunity of the gentleman calling for the reasons of laying the groundwork of this plan. It is objected by the honorable gentleman over the way, Mr. George Mason, that a Republican government is impracticable in an extensive country, and the extent of the United States is urged as a reason for the rejection of this Constitution. So, like I said earlier, these people were looking at this huge government or this huge country becoming a government and thinking that the federal government was the government of all. Well, it is, but it's only the government of the security for the all. It is only the government for, you know, protecting our foreign commerce and controlling our foreign affairs and those things, that within the domestic sphere of this nation, the states, the republics within the republic had all the control. So he goes on and says, let us consider the definition of a republic government as laid down by a man who is highly esteemed. Montesquieu, so celebrated among politicians, says that a republican government is that in which the body or only a part of the people is possessed of the supreme power. A monarchical, that in which a single person governs by fixed and established laws. A despotic government, that in which a single person without law and without rule directs everything by his own will and caprice. This author has not distinguished a republican government from a monarchy by the extent of its boundaries, but by the nature of its principles. He, in another place, contradistinguishes it as a government of laws in opposition to others which he dominates, a government of men. The empire of the government of laws, according to that phrase, is that in which the laws are made with the free will of the people. Hence, then if laws be made by the assent of the people, the agreement of the people, the government may be deemed free. When laws are made with integrity and executed with wisdom, the question is whether a great extent of country will tend to abridge the liberty of the people. If defensive force be necessary in proportion to the extent of the country, I conceive that in a judiciously constructed government, be the country so extensive, its inhabitants will be proportionally numerous and able to defend it. Extent of country, in my conception, ought to be no bar to the adoption of good government. No extent on earth. Okay, so I'll stop right there because I want to remind you, coming right up, instead of announcements or promos, we have Nicholas Gerber or Lionheart giving you some insights on what the heck's going on in China. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's 3 o'clock p.m. Hanoi time, Vietnam, February 9th. China is in total chaos. It's breaking through into Beijing, 100 miles away from Shanghai. 100 million now are quarantined, prepared for 7,500 dead bodies per day within 3 days in China. The Imperial College of London professor Neil Ferguson estimated that China is already experiencing 50,000 new infections per day. And given the 15% to 17% mortality rate that has now been triple D confirmed, those numbers will within a few weeks translate into 7,500 new deaths per day. That Vietnamese military is silently and quietly establishing field hospitals here, thousands upon thousands of death beds. Really on command, like I said, yet to numbers that are in China. But while the total numbers are not yet clear, at minimum hundreds of bodies are being cremated per day, sometimes up to 900 per day in certain crematories. So cremation vans are running 24/7 on the streets of Hubei province, and we are now at a pinnacle point. Now China is facing a pandemic apocalypse scenario that threatens the entire nation and the power base of its communist regime. I'll keep you up to date, but God be with you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So one of the things that I find interesting of what Mitchell Nicholas Gerber just mentioned is the fact that China is in this mode of trying to contain itself. This has created a level of chaos that not necessarily, I don't know for a fact whether China was prepared for this. Don't really care if they were or not. Fact of the matter is that they've let the genie out of the bottle, and now they're dealing with consequences that may actually create a paradigm shift amongst the people. Did China just unleash the genie that will then once again arouse the people of liberty? Will they finally say enough? Now, just keep in mind, it's 2020. China has fully implemented the Big Brother system to be able to watch. But what do they do when everybody is rising up? You know, it's easy to identify the outlier and go after them and keep everybody, you see that? Well, you better not cross the government. But now, when everybody realizes that their life is weighing in the balance from a tyrannical government, oh my gosh, this could be a huge change. So anyway, Governor Randolph is now going into the concepts of government. And so let me continue on what he says. And he says, I conceive that in a judiciously constructed government, be the country ever so extensive, its inhabitants will be proportionably numerous and able to defend it. Extent of country in my concepts, in my conception, ought to be no bar to the adoption of good government. No extent on earth seems to be too great, provided the laws be wisely executed, wisely made and executed. Excuse me. The principles of representation and responsibility may pervade a large as well as a small territory. And tyranny is as easily introduced into a small as into a large government or district. It may be answered that some of the most illustrious and distinguished authors are not of contrary opinion. In reply, that authority has no weight with me till I am convinced that not the dignity of names but the force of reasoning gains my assent. And so it's kind of interesting how he's basically saying that, you know, Montesquieu made some good points, but he was only speaking in, you know, theoretical. He wasn't speaking in absolutes. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, as this republic of republics, see, that's the thing that these men didn't understand. They thought that this became the all-consuming government. It was constrained based on the Constitution. It's exactly what they've been saying all this time. But in this particular case, this is precisely where the argument was introduced, or the concept was introduced on, you know, Montesquieu, and they were using Montesquieu as, hey, you know, we can't have this kind of government because Montesquieu says it won't be successful. If you understand what Montesquieu also said, he also basically stated that when you have this immense size of government, that you have to have a despotic ruler. Well, when you start centralizing all the powers into one, then it becomes less efficient and more tyrannical because you cannot have all that information. Even a computer, or I should say only a computer, can process the data of millions and millions and millions on a second's notice. If you understand the Big Brother system, what China is doing, it really does require a computer to rule the people and or make the decisions for the ruler or be able to do the analysis and provide the data for the ruler, for laws and executions and so forth. And so it becomes the gateway of having a single despotic ruler, the gateway of absolute tyranny and despotism. This is why what the framers had created from the insights and the inspirations from the divine hand of providence was giving us a system of laws and a system of justice and a system of liberty that allowed us to be a self-governed people as a representative government that only has powers to do what we have enumerated them to do within these constitutions. And so I believe the time has come where we've grown so much that counties may need to actually, you know, convert into just a lower level of government from just commissioners and a sheriff and that type of thing to where counties actually become mini states within the states where you have an executive that is elected not directly but by electors and or representatives who choose who is going to be the executive for a term of 4 years. And that county commissioners, being the legislatures, pull in more of the power. We need to probably look at and consider constitutions for our counties and redo the governments of our counties. In many of the states, there are states that are still vast and not populated enough to be able to support that level of government, like Wyoming and the Dakotas and so forth. But I'm telling you that in the states that have a large level of government, counties that have high populations need to be converted so that they can manage the people more effectively than the state can and or the state should, because the state could be hundreds of miles away from that county. A good example is California. Sacramento is a good day's travel from San Diego. And San Diego is such a high populated county that it should have its own county executive, because there's multiple cities besides just San Diego in San Diego County. And that way, the people of San Diego proper can't rule and, you know, be the despots of the county. And we need to start looking at how we can improve self-governance instead of surrendering our liberties for crappy government that is ruled by the few, the oligarchies and so forth. Okay, so this next one is a comment from Madison, one of many that we have, and he says, "I shall not attempt to make impressions by any ardent profession of zeal for the public welfare. We know the principles of every man will and ought to be judged not by his profession and declarations, but by his conduct." Kind of like, very similar to "I Had a Dream" by Martin Luther, right? Not by the character of his sin, but the character of his skin, but the content of his character. By that criterion, I mean, in common with every other member, to be judged, and should it prove unfavorable to my reputation, yet it is a criterion from which I will by no means depart. Comparisons have been made between the friends of this Constitution and those who oppose it. Although I disapprove of such comparisons, I trust that in truth, honor, and candor, and rectitude of motives, the friends of this system here and in other states are not inferior to its opponents. But professions of attachment to the good, to the public good, and comparisons of the parties ought not to govern or influence us now. We ought, sir, to examine the Constitution on its own merits solely. We are to inquire whether it will promote the public happiness to its aptitude to produce this desirable object ought to be the exclusive object of our present researches. In this pursuit, we ought not to address our arguments to the feelings and passions, but to those understandings and judgments which were selected by the people of this country." When he says this country, he's talking about Virginia. "To decide this great question by a calm and rational investigation. I hope that gentlemen, in displaying their abilities on this occasion, instead of giving opinions and making assertions, will condescend to prove and demonstrate by a fair and regular discussion. It gives me pain to hear gentlemen continually distorting the natural construction of language. For it is sufficient if any human production can stand a fair decision. Before I proceed to make some additions to the reasons which have been adduced by my honorable friend over the way, I must take the liberty to make some observations on what was said by another gentleman, Mr. Henry. He told us that this Constitution ought to be rejected because it endangered the public liberty, in his opinion, in many instances. Give me leave to make one answer to that observation. Let the dangers which this system is supposed to replete be clearly pointed out. If any dangerous, unnecessary powers be given to the general legislature, let them be plainly demonstrated, and let us not rest satisfied with the general assertions of danger," which is what Henry was doing. He was using demagoguery and so forth. "Without examination, if powers be necessary, apparent danger is not sufficient reason against conceding them. He has suggested that licentiousness has seldom produced the loss of liberty, but that the tyranny of rulers has almost always affected it." And so he goes on and talks about the encroachments, the history of encroachments, and so forth. But this is where he sets this up. He sets up the profound following arguments, which we kind of already covered, but I wanted to basically prove what Madison is saying. You know, these people are saying, hey, there's danger in this. There's this terror that will reign us if we do this. But they were general assertions, just like those who are using demagoguery against Republic Review. They do not come and talk about, in a substantive way, the issues and the and so forth. We'll be right back. I've finished this when we come back after these two promos, because that's important of how he set this up and how we move forward. Thank you. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. I get so frustrated when I deal with people who are attacking me and not the process. This is not about GR. Republic Review is not about GR Mobley. Republic Review is about state legislatures asserting their authority over their constitution. So let the argument be on the merits, the process itself as it's matured, because what has been happening from an organization that I've been complaining about for a long time, because all they're trying to do is attack me in devious ways. They'll go behind me after I've talked to people, and they'll try to disinform them based on these general allegations and assertions of danger when they have provided no proof, no substantive, direct debating and evidence per each issue and each step of the argument and step in the process. This is a very mature process now. I have actually worked with people within that organization to make this an ironclad closed case. This is a, you know, open and shut case as far as I am concerned regarding the evidence. This is irrefutable. I can't even get a constitutional professors to refute what I am asserting. They all recognize what I'm asserting, and they go, you know what, I'm not going to have anything to do with this. I don't want to have anything to do with this, because this will destroy the, you know, the gravy train of money flowing into my institution. I'm here to tell you, my friends, that when you start seeing people creating fear, or they attack the person, or they go, you know, with these generalities of, you know, the general concept as it was laid out in his book in 2013. Well, okay, I may not have articulated this well, but I have actually done the due diligence in going through, finding the holes, the little gaps, the bad wordage those types of things, editing, if you want to call it that. And this is a rock solid solution. There is no doubt in my mind. Republic Review is irrefutable. I ask you to do the due diligence. Go through the process. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org right there on the homepage, or go to the constitutional articles. The top three articles is the argument, the description, and the flow process. If you don't think that that's in detail enough, you want more detail, then let me know. But if you find anything that could lend to how this is just going to be a runaway convention when it is not even a convention, this is an assertion of power. This is an audit. If you understand an audit is the stakeholder stepping up and saying, where do we give you this power? It is a challenging of the unconstitutional authority that the federal government has usurped and has asserted. And they're making laws and treaties without the authority to do so. You cannot make a treaty if you have not been delegated the powers over those issues. It's that simple, my friends. And it just frustrates me that I'm dealing with people that are taking these immature and childish tactics. And what's even more frustrating is that some people actually lack the understanding of what these people are saying and how baseless it is, and they're just believing it because they trust that person, because that person has been told what to think to tell their friend, oh, this is a bad thing, don't trust this, and without saying any true assertion, like right here, do you see this line? This line right here is the indictment against this whole process. They can't say that. They don't say that. And the reason why is because it doesn't exist. There's no indictment within this process. The only indictments that will come forth from this process is the indictments of the federal government usurping states' authority and power. It's that simple. Now, Mr. Nicholas goes and he provides this articulation, and I'm just going to go ahead and read it. He says, Mr. Chairman, if the resolution taken by the House of going regularly through the system clause by clause had been followed, I should confine myself to one particular paragraph, as to my surprise, the debates have taken a different turn. Because at the very beginning of the Virginia ratification debates, they all agreed that they were going to go through this one clause at a time to basically debate it to ad nauseum and close the issue to no longer bring it up again. But they kept on bringing up the same things. The anti-federalists, as Madison pointed out in the previous section, or what I just read, was proving, the anti-federalists were proving that they didn't have an argument. They just said, this is a terrible thing. This will destroy the states, with ambiguous assertions. And he goes on and he says, I shall endeavor to go through the principal parts of the argument made use of by the gentleman in opposition to the proposed plan of government. The worthy gentleman entertained us largely on the impropriety of the dangers of the powers given by this plan to the general government. But his argument appears to be inconclusive and inaccurate. It amounts to this, that the powers given to any government ought to be small. I believe this, sir, is a new idea in politics. Powers being given for some certain purpose ought to be proportionate to that purpose, or else the end for which they are not delegated will not be answered, or which they are delegated, which not be answered. It is, in other words, if you give them power, but you only give them that power with limitations to it, then basically they don't have that power. It is necessary to give powers to a certain extent to any government. If a due medium be not observed in the delegation of such powers, one of two things must happen. If they be too small, the government must molder and decay away. If too extensive, the people must be oppressed. As there can be no liberty without government, it must be as dangerous to make powers too limited as too great. He tells us that the Constitution annihilates the Confederation. Did he not prove that every people had a right to change their government when it should be deemed inadequate to their happiness? the Confederation being found utterly defective, will he deny our right to alter or abolish it? But he objects to the expression, we the people, and demands the reason why they had not said, we the United States of America. In my opinion, the expression is highly proper. Now, I'm going to basically, because this is a following comment by Nicholas from Madison, and remember, Madison made the same thing, we the people, but not we the people of one body, but we the people of 13 separate sovereigns. It was about style. I've told you this many times. The we the people in the Constitution, it was all about style. It was not defining a democracy. Anyway, we the people of the United States, or we the United States of America. In my opinion, the expression is highly proper. It is submitted to the people because to them it is to operate. Till adopted, it is but a dead letter and not binding on anyone when adopted. It becomes binding to the people who adopt it. It is proper on another account. We are under great obligation to the Federal Convention for recurring to the people the source of all power. The gentleman's argument militates against himself. He says that persons in power never relinquish their powers willingly. If then the state legislators would not relinquish part of their powers they now possess to enable general government to support the Union, reference to the people necessarily. And one of the things that was pointed out is that, okay, so if governments do not relinquish their power, then how can he explain the 7 or 8 states that had already ascended or acceded and basically accepted this Constitution? Did they not just give up some of their power in doing so? And I believe Madison had pointed that out before. Now, here's an interesting comment that is by George Nicholas also. And he says, but it is complained that they may suspend our laws. The suspension of the writ of habeas corpus is only to take place in cases of rebellion or invasion. This is necessary in those cases. In every other case, Congress is restrained from suspending it. So, and Madison clarifies that it can only occur in those states where the militia is deployed. In other words, where the insurrection and rebellion is occurring or where the invasion is occurring. Congress and the President of the United States, actually, the President of the United States doesn't, but he's the executor, but Congress can call forth the militia and then deploy them and actually call for the suspension of habeas corpus and call for martial law. That is what should happen if we have a Republican Congress. They should call for martial law and the deployment of the militia into the state of California. And then they basically should shut down, you know, the government itself because it has become rebellious to the Constitution. Newsom and the rest of the legislature should all be arrested for treason and at a minimum, violation to their oath of office, moral perjury, and be removed from office at a minimum and be recommended for criminal trial. Because California has no business in being able to undermine the Constitution. We'll get back into this martial law by George Nicholas and his comments in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.